Ghost of America and live from the G&D Show Studio, this is your Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show.
Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Welcome back, world. Welcome back, Shatter Nation, to the one, the only Mystifying Oracle Radio, your Ghost Man, you guessed it, and Demon Hunter's show. Demon Hunter!
Hello?
What's there? Going? Yes!
Are you on the line?
Sunday night.
Am I on the line?
You are on the line. Yeah, special thanks to all our homes, all our sponsors, Stitcher, Smart Radio, Planet Paranormal, Action Audio Apps. Hey! Are you guys listening? Because they want to know at actionaudioapps.com. Our buddies in Canada, Paranormal A Radio Network. Thanks, guys, for being so cool.
Hey.
Yeah, special thanks to the SYL Project. Share your love today, the SYLproject.com. Giving those in need what they need, love. Did you like that?
I like that.
I did. I threw that in. Have a special, man. Sunday night is our night. We're back.
Yes, yeah. Nobody else can have Sunday night. It's all ours.
It's our booking night. And those hours we used to have, 9 to 10:30, was our time slot. But we changed it for The Walking Dead. True professional radio, guys. Professional broadcasting.
Which will come in handy come August when Fear of the Walking Dead comes out.
That's right. Radio for the people, by the people.
In time for Walking Dead.
In time for Walking Dead. No contracts here, folks. No big corporate sellouts. Just radio. Spooky radio. Strange radio. Horror radio. All that good stuff. So what's going on, man? It's Sunday night. We are back in studio. Thanks for joining us again, Shadow Nation. What's happening around the world? Have you heard anything?
There's like a peace treaty somewhere.
Yeah.
And
somebody's mad. Somebody's offended.
Everybody's offended.
Yes, I'm offended.
I want to know
that.
What the point of being offended is. Somebody made a quite good comment to me today. They said, being offended doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
They said, if you tell me you're offended,
yeah,
why am I supposed to care?
Uh-huh.
Really? It's like if you tell me, I really like the color blue, so now I've got to wear blue all the time?
Right.
So if you're offended, I have to watch what I say.
Yeah. Well, you've offended just about everybody you've ever met in life. So, including me, but I just keep holding on, you know.
Well, offending people's half the fun.
I can handle it. Hey, last night, I was sitting at home. Best night of the week. Well, Saturday night and Sunday night, but Saturday's the best because you don't have nowhere to go Sunday if you don't work weekends, and you get all night Saturday. So I was looking for things to watch. I was on Google Play. And I watched that old documentary from a couple years ago, My Amityville. Have you seen this?
I have not.
It's with the young Danny Lutz. Well, he's not young anymore. He's grown up. But it was with the very controversial. It was with the kid basically in the movie that got his hand smashed.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, the documentary team was interviewing him. Hey, did this stuff happen? Blah, 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 blah. And, you know, they went through the thing. They went to Lorraine Warren's house, of course, by the famed Warren's, the demonologist. And, you know, she had her roosters and walked him around. And they you know, she sat down with him. She showed him a cross that's supposed to have a real piece of the wood off of the cross that Christ was sacrificed, or I'm sorry, crucified on. And
it was a sacrifice,
which was pretty cool. You know, if that was truly a piece of wood off that, I don't know how they would know that, but it was cool anyway. But he was there, and I wish you would have seen it, because as much as people want to believe, or I want to believe, in the Amityville horror, because we grew up on the movies, right?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, and that's more out your way than mine. I've never got to see the house. Have you seen the house?
Well, I've seen the house.
Yeah.
What bothered me was, as you know, last week I was in New Jersey.
Yeah.
And I was right around the corner from the house they used to film the movie.
Right.
And I didn't know I was right around the corner from it, so I never went to see it.
Really? And it was right there.
right there. And apparently they've like closed off the road and they don't let people up there anymore and all this stuff. So I probably couldn't get it in anyway. But I was just annoyed at myself, you know.
Well, you know, it was I think it's funny because the owners, you know, they had the owners that the controversy was it haunted the Lutz leave in the middle of the night because they got in financial dire straits. You know what I'm talking about. You know case.
Yeah.
We've all studied this case that's into the paranormal. But, you know, they walk around the house. They showed the pictures of the, you know, fresh food in the refrigerator, the clothes laying on the couch, all this stuff to, you know, try to say, well, these guys left in the middle of the night in terror. You know, this isn't a family that planned to leave. They left all their belongings. Of course, they didn't mention, did they come back for their belongings? You know, nobody talked about that. But, you know, I love the Amityville Horror, you know, the house that we've had people on in the past from the story The Conjuring. You know, and you want to believe these people all these years, the things we've seen, the things we've heard, the constant talks with skeptics and non-believers and whatever, and me and you sit in the middle where we believe, but not everything people feed us. But, you know, you want to believe nonetheless. So they're interviewing him, and I noticed that Danny Lutz, Daniel, I guess is now, he's all grown up, but he's a very nervous person. He made me. Have you ever watched a movie where you're nervous by watching somebody? They make you nervous? Okay, so, or talk to somebody or anything. But they're interviewing this guy, and he's all over the place. I mean, his eyes are, you know, moving around, and he's very angry. Like, you know, very, everything he says was, and he talked, I mean, it's open. He talked about his psychiatrist and, you know, the help he was doing, which, you know, in fact, if he went through the things he said he did, then granted, I think I'd be seeing a psychiatrist too. Although we look for this stuff and we went through some things and, you know, we haven't seen psychiatrists. Well, not recently. We probably need to with our show.
Nothing that doesn't relate to ex-wives, at least.
Right, right. Ex-wives are off the table there. But anyway, they were interviewing him, guys. If you haven't seen it, My Amityville Horror, that's what it is. And it follows up with one of the kids. It said that the other members of the family didn't want to be interviewed for the program. So, you know.
Well, you got to remember too, Sean, I've told you before, I never got to meet George.
No.
Had the opportunity, didn't take it. Man passed away, and so left me very disappointed. Never got to meet him. And when you have an opportunity like that, folks, take it, because you never know when that top opportunity is going to disappear.
That's true.
But I did get to see him speak. And he used to like to say, if you take what happened to us and times it by 10, you get the book.
Right.
And if you take what happened in the book and times that by 100, you get the movie.
Like many things, yeah.
Right. And he says people always argue that, you know, this didn't happen to us or this or that. But I'm not saying the movie happened to me.
Right.
I'm saying the story that led to the book, which led to the movie, happened to me.
Right.
And what would it take you to run out of the house in the middle of the night with this to protect your family if even 1/100th of what's happening in the movie happened to you?
Yeah, exactly right. And we will never know because people don't want to take the word off the people that seen it. A lot of people don't. And then they, you know, think it's hogwash, and they read the story and say, well, this is BS. So, I mean, what? You don't believe the people. You don't believe the book. You don't believe the movie. I mean, so it goes on and on. But anyway, he went into detail, and he was really hard on George Lutz, the father.
Right.
And for you guys that have seen the movie, George Lutz.
And that was his stepfather.
Yeah, his stepdad. You know, I didn't know that, but I did actually from the movie. But Shadow Nation, if you watch My Amityville Horror, if you're familiar with the old movie Amityville Horror, George Lutz was the stepfather. But Danny said that, you know, they used to take wooden spoons to him, and that he had to call him Mr. Lutz or Sir. When they sounds strange, but that's what he said had to happen around the house. I guess all the kids had to do that.
It was the 70s.
That's true. I guess he was an ex-Marine, Mr. Lutz was, or whatever. And yeah, so anyway, you know, saying the least, it was hard go in that house. But Danny did talk about the dog out back, being pushed up the stairs by an invisible force. Talked about the flies in the room. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you know, and he talked about an apparition after his fingers got smashed. Here's one thing. His fingers got smashed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody knows that, you know, scene when he's up there and the kid and the thing comes
he's
down.
He's trying to open the window or close the window or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so his fingers get smashed and the woman's interviewing him on it. And he's talking about, you know, this horrific thing. And he went downstairs to the kitchen. His mom got him some ice and she's freaking out. And, you know, there's his hand swelled up to the size of a child's baseball mitt, catcher's mitt. And the lady said, you know, did you go to the doctor? Did your family take you to the doctor? And he goes on to say, while they were sitting there, an apparition, the door comes open. An apparition walks in, sits down next to him or at the kitchen table. And the lady said, well, what did you do? You know, most people would be right out of the house. He said, I looked at my mom and said, hey, can I get that ice? You know, I guess because they were so used to the strange stuff happening there or whatever. I don't know. But after he said the apparition walked through his fingers on its way to the kitchen table, and they looked up and the apparition was gone. And when his mother brought him the ice, his fingers were healed, basically. All except one. And he had like a crooked finger and it wouldn't bend down. And he said, you know, this is the direct result. And no, I didn't go to the doctor. Just a lot of things that would lead to questions. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, and I also think this, people have to remember, we judge things by what we're doing today.
Right, right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And people forget things were different 30, 40, 50 years ago.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And, you know, when I was growing up in the 70s,
yeah,
I remember once coming home late at night, and I grew up on a farm.
Right.
And I came home late at night, and we had to feed, we had captured, and people are gonna, we're gonna get hate mail, Sean. I'm gonna offend more people. You know, we had captured raccoons.
Okay, yeah, yeah, raccoons.
You know, and once we caught the raccoons, we would keep them and feed them until fall so that we could skin them and sell the furs. We lived in the country. This is what you did.
You were really like Daniel Boone types, weren't you?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there's a reason when my father asked me, Nathan, you don't want to be a farmer. What do you want to do? I said, Dad, I want to go into theater and broadcasting.
Yeah.
And only time my dad ever cried.
Yeah.
But, you know, we had captured these raccoons and somebody had to go feed them.
Yeah.
And I didn't think twice about saying, I'll do it. And I grabbed a bucket of food and I walked around the back of the barn and I tripped over some bales of barbed wire.
Oh, yeah. Be right.
So I literally fell into rolls of barbed wire and cut myself up from like the bottom of my ankles all the way up my inner thighs and my stomach and my chest.
Yeah, right.
And my family dealt with this by picking me up, carrying me inside, and putting me in a tub of lukewarm water and washing the wounds clean.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't go to the doctor for that.
Okay.
You know, I'd had my tetanus shot, so what were you going to do?
So do you still have the scars on you, or is it just
puncture
holes?
You know, it's funny. We were just talking the other day about how many little scars I have all over me. And now that I work out in the sun and my skin's getting tanner,
yeah,
you can see the little scars all over me.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, it's that. But what were you going to do? You know, right, insurance wasn't the same as it is now. We were farmers. We didn't have insurance.
Right, right.
You didn't run to the doctor every time a kid fell down.
Yeah.
You know, like they do nowadays.
Well,
it was just the way it was. If you didn't break a bone, you didn't go to the doctor.
Right.
That's just the way it was. And so if his hand was not broken, I can understand why they didn't go to the doctor over that.
I don't know.
And besides, even back then, even though it wasn't like it is now, you walk into a hospital with a kid with a broken hand and can't explain how it happened, somebody's going to be interested and want to start investigating the family.
Right. Well, they ended up investigating the family anyway. But yeah, I see what you're saying. He was describing it as skin on skin, though. I mean, you know, even back in the 70s, any parent that would see their child's hand explode when a wood sill window come down on it. But, you know, hey, I'm not saying he's fibbing. I mean, I don't know. I wasn't there. But I'm just saying it leaves so many holes that they can't.
I don't see the holes. I don't see the holes, Sean.
They
don't see them.
They can't go back to the doctor and find medical records and stuff like that to back this up. But
my son fell down the stairs again.
Yeah, again. And my son fell up the stairs. He was pushed. Anyway, it's an interesting documentary, My Amityville Horror. And at the very end, this is what I was getting to, they ask him, you know, would you take a lie detector test? Everybody wants to know, these people have seen it, would you take a lie detector test? Even though, you know, it's not admissible in court and, you know, all these things. But everybody always says, would you take one? But then when the people that go through stuff, like the cat in Fire in the Sky, they still say he's a liar. So, but anyway.
I don't see the point of the lie detector test outside of, like, police work anyway. Because, like you say, if you pass, people say they're not 100% dependable.
Right.
But if you fail, they say, or come up inconclusive, they say, well, right there, there's your proof. He did. Yeah. He was lying.
It's really a no winner. I mean, you just can't win. It's a no-win situation. But he got buried.
On a personal side of doing something outside of the law, I don't see the point of a lie detector test. It doesn't favor any, like, no one should voluntarily agree to it outside of, like, a criminal case for anything, because, like I said, it does you no good. It either says you're lying, or it says, oh, it's not conclusive. So, I mean, if somebody came up and said, did everything you say happen to you, would you be willing to take a lie detector? I'd be like, no, I'm not going to take a lie detector.
Really?
If you don't believe me, don't listen to my show, don't watch my stuff.
Right. Well, you know, it's what happened, and at the end, I was just going to say, he got really agitated, and he told the guy, you know, we're going to have some words after this is over with. I mean, I thought he was going to slap the guy. I mean, it got bad, and, you know, it was just, he got real agitated, and then in the end, he said, you know, my friends want to know this, this person wants to know if I would take the test, this person. And finally he said, you know, yeah, I would take one, but, you know, I don't need to, you know, to prove it to myself. That's why I'm doing this documentary. So, you know, whatever. It's a good documentary, guys. Check it out. I thought it was, I know it's like a year old or 2 years old, but it's the first time I had watched it. And I don't know. It was really interesting. Of course, they showed the famous.
I watched it after you told me to watch it.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Well,
it got the Sean Burris seal of approval, so I watched it.
Well, I seen the previews of it, and I seen like 16 minutes of it, but I never got to finish it. So I finished it last night, and, you know, I thought it was interesting.
Oh, so you recommended it to me even though you hadn't seen the whole thing?
Well, I seen 16 minutes of it, and
okay, yeah, I see how it goes.
The business we're in, I thought, you know, that would be the – check it out. Anyway, guys, Amityville Horror, Danny Lutz, who was a child when the events recounted he recounts the events in Jay Anson's The Amityville Horror. He tells his side of the story. So anyway, that was it. But, you know, there's been a lot of stuff because we worked the paranormal circuit for a long time, and we had some inside people that said lies were involved and hatred towards each other and, you know, blah, 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 blah. There's always conspiracy and girl locker room talk kind of thing. Even in the paranormal community, Demon Hunter,
Ghost Bond,
Shadow Nation, you know what time it is. Tonight's guest. Since the young age of 7, he was entranced by fantasy movies. He says he would watch a movie so he could try and replicate something from that. In 9th grade, he attended Tom Savini's special makeup effects program. There, he would learn the tricks of the trade. At age 26, he received a phone call that would change everything. They asked him, Sci-Fi Channel asked him to compete in the Sci-Fi Channel smash hit Face Off. Tonight, Mr. Tyler Green stops by. He's a runner-up, guys, from season 6 of Face Off. Some believe he should have won.
I think he should have won.
You think he should have won?
I think he should have won.
He's a great FX artist, guys. And for all you artists out there, and they actually described him. He describes himself as a fantasy-driven artist. And I wouldn't differ with him. I think he's a great artist. And he comes by the show tonight, guys, to tell all. Tyler Green, tonight, only at the home of the Mystifying Oracle Radio, your Ghostman and Demon Hunter show. Big score. Good show. This is the first time we have a makeup artist coming on. Anybody from Face Off.
Yeah, that's true. We've been trying for a while.
Yeah, I always wondered how you could do that. I mean, I even wanted to do it because we love the horror stuff. I do the Halloween party every year, and I thought, man, how can I make? So I start looking on YouTube to do stuff, and it's really fun, man, to get involved in it. Of course, when you get on Face Off and they give you only so much time, it probably loses some of that fun.
Well, that's one of the things I want to ask him about because, like, my wife always sits there and says, there's no way they can get all this done in that amount of time. I'm like, Chrissy, that's the point of the show, to get it all done in that amount of time.
That's the premise. Kind of like Chef, what's the British chef? I can't stand him.
Guy Ramsay?
Yeah, Ramsay. He runs around screaming and everything. Anyway, you know reality TV scripted. So, you know, he sets and comes up with his burns, if you would say. Like the kids say, oh, you got burned, you know.
Well, this is one of the things you and I are probably going to talk about this year, Sean, when we start our tour.
Yeah.
Folks, right now, Ghost Band and Demon Hunter Show, working on a tour for 2016.
Yeah, Furicon.
Yeah, starting off with Furicon.
Yeah, in Utah.
Yep. But one of the things that people ask me all the time is reality TV scripted?
Yeah, well, yeah.
And I tell them, I don't feel that reality TV is scripted. But I do believe that, like, when you and I would find something really cool and the cameras weren't facing us, they would ask us to do it six more times.
Yeah. Show your emotion.
One of those six is what shows up on camera, on the screen.
Well, you know, when I'm saying scripted, I don't mean, you know, everything's faked and stuff like that. I'm just saying what you just said there. I mean, there has to be a direction with the show. I mean, you know, we talked about this before. People think reality TV, you just turn the cameras on and people go crazy. No, folks, it's not like that. It is a production. There's millions of dollars being spent behind it. They're not just going to let you run with a camera. It's not going to happen. Even the movie, I was watching it Friday. You know that show, Naked and Alone.
Naked and Afraid?
Whatever. Hot chicks, some hot, walking around naked, and you see their crack. That's about it. But I was watching it, and this.
Oh, hold on a second there, brother. Hold on.
What's that?
I was trying to get into our chat room.
Are those spirits? No, those but they.
Spirits.
I see we're still having commercials go. Anyway, thanks, chat room. But no, they Naked and Afraid or whatever. I was watching Friday nights, and I was at work, and it was on break, and I seen this lady, and she was crying, and she was like all huddled up under this thing, and you know,
Sean found out there wasn't really a lady in the room.
Yeah, haunted, Naked and Afraid, but that'll be next. We just gave somebody a $1 million idea, but she's by herself, and it looks like she's holding the camera, Blair Witch style. And she's shaking. She's saying, so scared, and I'm isolated, and all this stuff. And then there's a faraway shot, and it's moving around. You know, it's the cameraman. He's moving back and forth. So I guess it's as isolated as you can be with the director and the cameraman there.
I think I ruined, for Chrissy P, ruined reality TV in one night. We were watching. You remember we had one of the stars of Destination Truth on the show.
Yeah.
And we discussed for a while that bridge shot where they fell off the bridge riding the motorcycles. And we were watching that show, Chrissy and I, and I said, oh, you know, you're watching them drive across the bridge from the front, and then you're watching them drive across the bridge from a distance. Then you're watching them drive across the bridge from behind. It's like, Chrissy, you realize they had to have shot that at least three times.
Right.
Because nowhere in there do you see a cameraman. And they got it from three different angles.
Right. No. Those were preset. They preset those.
Oh, yeah. That's it.
Yeah. I remember when we had Extreme Paranormal. Remember, some people commented. A lot of people loved it. Some people said, they're not, you know, there's camera people and directors. Of course there's camera people and directors. That's kind of what it is. But you know as well as I did, Nathan, they, a lot with Extreme Paranormal, with A&E, they kind of said, go nuts.
Yeah.
You know, when a lot of places in Pennhurst, it was you and I walking down, and, you know, if there was a cameraman, they would set up the cameras on the tripod. Remember when we were in the bed at the end, I was getting the electric shocks?
They couldn't come in because they weren't in the room. They didn't know what was happening to you. You had the remote camera in there.
They were following you guys downstairs only for a while. And I was upstairs getting hit. And then that thing in the corner, that light bulb, remember that?
Yeah, it just fell on its own.
It was leaning all the way to its right, guys. This, what do they call those? Fluorescent.
Fluorescent.
Yeah, and it was a real long one. And it was laying all the way to the right. And I'm in a pitch black room. And before the guys come up, it goes all the way. You can see it in the camera. Goes all the way to the left and shatters on the floor. And when I said, what the? I mean, I was really spooked. I was scared there. I mean, if anybody's ever been to Pennhurst, it's not the most pleasant place to be.
And we were not in your typical part of Pennhurst that you get to take the tour through.
No.
We were in like one of the buildings in the back that was falling down.
Right.
And I think about the stuff we did on that show now, Sean. I think about it and I realize that, you know, we tied you up to be electrocuted.
Yeah.
And then we left you there.
That's right.
We buried Jason alive, and the poor guy almost had a heart attack.
Yeah, that was a spooky thing. They put an oxygen canister in with him and a mask,
yep.
And he actually got bit by that spider on his face. Remember that?
Yeah, and see, I'm an evil man by nature. I wanted to put a snake in the coffin with him.
Yeah,
and I was like, well, you know, it's voodoo, and snakes are very important in voodoo.
Yeah, we need to check out Priestess Miriam. We haven't heard from her. I wonder if she was pretty old. I wonder if she's still kicking around there.
I hope she's still okay.
She was a voodoo practitioner. She's like the voodoo queen of New Orleans, right?
Yep.
Wasn't she a descendant of Marie Laveau?
No, I think she is the heir apparent from Marie Laveau's line.
Okay.
You know, there's always got to be a queen of voodoo in New Orleans, so I think she is the heir apparent to that line. But but we buried Jason alive, and
that's fun.
And even though we did put extra supports above that coffin, folks, we buried that poor guy alive.
Yeah, we did. He was under the ground.
We left him tied up in the straitjacket.
Yeah.
Well, we went off and did our own thing.
100 degrees in the swamp in the middle of July or whenever it was, June. Yep.
Well, and then what was it? I did that voodoo ritual while you guys went off. And I passed out and I landed on an anthill.
Yeah,
when
red
I came
ants.
Back, I was being eaten by fire ants.
Yeah. Those are fire ants in the middle of a swamp. Those aren't just your common household ants, guys. Yeah, I remember carrying you back to the boat that we had off to the side there, because we're in the middle of the swamp, guys, surrounded by alligators, and you were sweaty. We were all drenched.
It was classic. What do you call it when you run out of water, there, Sean?
Dehydration.
Yeah. Classic dehydration. I didn't know where I was. My head was pounding. And once they revived me, guess what, folks? We got to go back to filming.
Yeah, straight back to filming, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. FearCon, guys. We're getting a jump start on that. Special thanks to Tyler Feddersen and a few of the other guys, the staff that got that going. We got a great invite. Very honored to do it. Nathan and I will be returning. That's what we got slated right now in 2016, man.
Yeah, 2016, FearCon, April 2016.
April 29th and 30th. We'll be out there. It's at the Fear Factory. I guess it's a haunted attraction. They're going to have zip lines and stuff. It's also supposed to be really haunted. They do ghost tours and ghost hunts there. So zip lines.
Sean and I will be allotting weekends in the upcoming year to be able to do these fun events. So remember, folks, if you want to see us, you have to let the people running those cons know you want the Ghostman Demon Hunter show there.
Yeah, you do, absolutely. But
what you were about to tell us, what's going on at FearCon, Sean?
Well, no, they're going to have some people from The Walking Dead there. They're going to have some big stars from paranormal television shows, stuff like that, and horror movies and stuff like that. So they're still booking. It's in the early stages, but they will have the Mystifying Oracle Radio, Nathan and myself there. So I'm sure we'll be doing we're not clear on the details yet, but I'm sure we'll be doing a Q&A or something, right, Nate?
I should hope so.
Yeah, so.
I like a lot of Q&A. Wait, Q&A?
Yeah.
Sorry, I got confused there.
Hashtag FearCon, guys. That's FearACon. FearCon. Check it out. It's coming to Utah next April. So we'll be there. Be there with bells on. I'm excited about it, man.
I'm excited about it. You and I haven't gotten to do a conference in a few years.
No, we haven't. I wish somebody would hold one in Sleepy Hollow again. I wish we could go back there.
Well, I wish we had known about the Connecticut HorrorCon a little earlier. That would have been perfect for you and I. You could have come out here and stayed at my house.
Yeah, yeah.
That was we should have just hung out there.
You said you didn't know it was a horror convention.
No, I thought it was. I knew it was a horror convention, but I thought it was a horror writers' convention.
Right.
And then I just showed up, and that's how I met Tyler, who's going to be on the show tonight.
Right, right. Tyler's going to be on. Hey, 8 shocking stories of grave robberies.
Grave robberies?
Yeah, I was looking up some stuff this week to talk about on the show.
Do people still do that?
No, I don't think they still... Well, I'm sure they do in some third world countries. Maybe right here. You don't hear much about it, but... Anyway, 8 shocking stories of grave robberies. You want to hear it?
I definitely want to hear it.
You want to hear it, Shadow Nation? Yes, I do. Okay.
Yes, okay. Yes, we want to hear it, Sean.
Anyway,
number one,
the silent film director whose head went missing in a possible occult ritual. Yeah, you heard me right. Why would anyone steal silent film director F.W. Murnau's head from a crypt in Potsdam, Germany? Why? Why, Nathan?
Because they wanted to get a little ahead.
And police and officials... No, you're wrong. Police and officials of the Murnau Foundation believe occultists are responsible and confirmed that they were investigating the theft of skeletal parts from a burial chamber in the Standorf Cemetery southwest of Berlin, where Murnau has been buried for 83 years.
And he still can't get some rest.
Yeah, anyway, police wouldn't readily identify the long-dead victim, but the Friedrich Wilhelm Murnau Foundation, ooh, this is a tough one, the government ran overseer of Murnau's workshop and legacy confirmed that it was indeed Murnau's crypt. Murnau created the 1922 classic masterpiece Nosferatu.
Nosferatu.
Yeah, a retelling of the Dracula tale starring rat-like Max Schrecks as the wizened ancient vampire. Anyway, his head was cut off. Or his skull was taken. Number two, the inept gang who tried to snatch Lincoln's body. You might know that from History Channel. Did a real good piece on it a couple years back, stealing Lincoln's body. You remember that?
I do remember that. That was a good piece.
Yeah, 1876, Abraham Lincoln's body lay within the above-ground white marble sarcophagus, which we put pictures of that last year on our Facebook page. Remember that?
I do remember that.
I went out there, took the kids and everything. Anyway, he was in a tomb on the grounds of Springfield, Illinois, Oak Ridge Cemetery. Only thing standing between the body and any would-be grave robber was a single padlock on the tomb's chamber door. His sarcophagus wasn't at all burglar-proof. Its lid was sealed, not with cement, but with the less permanent plaster of Paris. Anyway.
Okay.
After all, they say, who would want to steal Lincoln's body? Well, I got your answer. Enter a gang of Irish counterfeiters from Chicago, led by a small-time crook boss named Big Jim Connolly. Early in the 1876, Connolly's best engraver of the counterfeit plates, Benjamin Boyd, had been sentenced to 10 years in the state penitentiary, so they figured...
And they wanted what? Image a better look at Lincoln so they could fake $5 bills a little better?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. But anyway, they got Lincoln's body. Or they never got Lincoln's body. Pinkerton Security... got him long before that. But they were going to take it for $200,000 cash ransom. Yeah. It was just unheard of. Number three, the grave robber who dug up 29 girls and dressed them for birthday parties.
What?
I'm serious, man. Creepy footage filmed by a self-described Russian historian, Anatoly Moskvin, shows several bodies he exhumed after visiting more than 700 cemeteries sitting around his house in bizarre costumes. Yeah. Moskvin is rumored to have dug up approximately 150 graves so he could dress the corpses of dozens of young girls for birthday parties. He also compiled up-to-date information about the lives of each girl he had dug up. That's terrible! His macabre obsession with the dead was discovered when his parents visited him after returning from holiday. A reputed genius who speaks 13 languages, the 46-year-old from city of Nizhny Novgorod in central Russia, was arrested.
Good thing we're not doing news.
Yeah, he was arrested in 2011. But he will not stand trial for his appalling crimes. A judge has ruled that he is not mentally fit enough to stand trial and he should remain in...
Well, what would give you that idea?
Should him remain in psychiatric clinic. Wow! Claimed his fascination with the dead girl began... The fascination with the dead began when he was 12, when he came across a funeral procession whose participants forced him to kiss the face of a dead 11-year-old girl. Wow! Anyway.
His first time, man. His first time.
He must have
felt that popped his cherry.
Oh, that's nasty. The grave robbers who loot from bodies of fallen soldiers. That's terrible. For profit. Anyway, in 2012, it was discovered the grave robbers were plundering the burial sites of thousands of German soldiers to feed the demand of Nazi memorabilia. Well, really? tens of thousands of troops from the Third Reich were killed in battlefields in Eastern Europe during the Second World War, and apparently four guys went around and looted these bodies for Nazi paraphernalia. Here's a good one. Number five, the famous family who staged a phony grave robbery in order to move a body to the place of their choice. Guess who it is? Famous.
Famous? Wait, I'm sorry. Say that question again.
It was a family, famous family who did a fake grave robbery to have the remains moved to a burial spot of their choosing and not have to pay for it. Go ahead. God. 2 seconds.
I am totally a loss.
Say you're totally lost. Did Elvis Presley's family stage a plot to snatch the king's body after he died in 1977? Question
mark. Really?
Yeah. An FBI informant says yes, they did, and was also allegedly involved in the scheme. The goal was to persuade Memphis to move Elvis from the public cemetery to Graceland, which is now a $15 million a year tourist attraction. The late Vernon Presley, Elvis's father and executor of the estate at the time, wanted his son buried on the mansion's grounds, but it was in an area not zoned for burials. 3 weeks after Elvis died of a heart attack, Vernon had lawyers for the Presley estate petition the Memphis and Shelby County Board of Adjustments for a zoning variance. They cited what they called an attempted theft of Presley's body several days earlier in the expense of round-the-clock security. Obviously, the grave robber was a hoax, but nonetheless, three men were arrested on August 29, 1977, near the Forest Hill Cemetery mausoleum, where Elvis was entombed in a 900-pound copper coffin. One of them was Ronnie Tyler, who later became an FBI informant. Tyler had been in cahoots with a crooked deputy sheriff who swooped down and captured the thieves, said Ivan C. Smith, former head of the FBI Arkansas office. On September 28, 1977, the board okayed Presley's request to move his son's body to Graceland. The singer was reburied there in October 2nd.
So when you go to visit Elvis Presley's body at Graceland,
yeah,
you're technically an accomplice to the crime.
You are. It was a lie to get his body moved because they had
I tell you.
That's crazy.
The things people do.
You would think the family would have rights to have the body buried anywhere they want anyway.
No, that's not how burials work these days.
It's not, huh?
No.
So the state has right to put you where they want?
Yeah, you got to be in a zoned area.
Okay, well, anyway, the disgruntled employee who stole Groucho Marx's remains and left them at different cemeteries.
Well, anybody who would steal Groucho Marx's remains would have to be pretty disgruntled.
Well, the kidnapper, or in this case, Ashnapper, he was Ashes apparently, has
you
never
didn't get
been...
my joke, did you?
No, okay. I don't get most of your jokes. Anyway, he's never been caught. But questions remain, why were Marx's ashes stolen, and who was the culprit? An obsessed fan looking for the ultimate souvenir, a ghoulish opportunist planning to make a ransom demand, then changed his mind, or simply someone who thought the comedian should be buried at a more high-profile location closer to Hollywood. So anyway, they stole these ashes. I didn't know that. Groucho Marx is all over the place, guys, in Hollywood. Literally all over.
See, Sean, when I die, I want you to have me cremated, the ashes mixed with cement, and that cement can be poured into our own Hollywood star Walk of Fame.
I was going to say, dump them in a production company's front yard or something. Number seven, the man who held Charlie Chaplin's body for $600,000 ransom. Yeah. In 1978, two men stole the corpse of Charlie Chaplin. Ooh.
See, think about that, Sean. Nobody would pay $600,000 for the two of us alive.
Well, no, they wouldn't. I wouldn't think they'd pay it for Charlie Chaplin either, especially, well, I guess in 78. Anyway, the corpse was stolen in 78. Charlie Chaplin from a cemetery in Swiss village of Corsaire-sur-Vevey, located in the hills above Lake Geneva near Lausanne, Switzerland. Immediately after the body snatching, Chaplin's widow, Una, received a ransom demand of $600,000, which she refused to pay, saying that her husband would have thought the demand ridiculous. The callers then made threats against her youngest children. After a five-week investigation, police arrested two auto mechanics, Roman Wardus of Poland and Gancho Ganev of Bulgaria. Busted the criminals, led police to Chaplin's body, which they had buried in a cornfield about 1 mile from his family's home in Corsaire. In December of 78, Wardus and Ganev were convicted of grave robbing and attempted extortion. Wow.
Really?
Yeah. Mysterious Grave Robbers, you stole the hands of Juan Perón. You don't know who that is. 1976, former Argentinian president Juan Perón's coffin was placed in the Perón family tomb, where his hands came out missing.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's it, folks. Top 8 grave robbing incidences. Incidences. Anyway, what do you say we do in the news?
In the news?
In the news. That's not in the news. That's tonight's guest. This is in the news. It's always fresh. It's always exciting. It's strange and weird, and it's straight from the G&D show vaults. And it starts right now. That's it. G&D show in the news. Yeah.
That's right, folks. It's G&D in the news. That's weird news that Sean and I pick right out of the paper because we like the titles. Yeah. That means we haven't read them in advance, and we tend to make a lot of mistakes. Every time we make a mistake, you take a drink. That's why it's called the G&D drinking game. The rules are simple. Sean and I goof up. You take a drink. Sean might ring the bell. He might not. If you think we made a mistake, take a drink anyway. But we would like to point out that if you are listening to this while driving in your car, please don't play the G&D drinking game. And of course, if you're planning to do anything important this evening, like, say,
propose,
or if you're not planning to propose, you might end up doing it anyway if you play the game long enough. Please listen responsibly.
Listen good. Yeah. Anyway, you want me to lead us off or what?
Sure. Why don't I lead us off?
You want to? Okay, you go ahead.
Okay. From the Huffington Post, Sean.
Yes.
Don't panic. It's just a blood red lake.
Ooh!
And get ready to drink, folks, because Tazgula.
Tazgula.
A salt lake.
Oh, good.
A salt lake in Aksaray, Turkey.
Yeah.
Looks like the devil's swimming pool.
Okay.
Now that a massive algae bloom has turned a bizarre shade of pink.
Okay.
I thought they said blood red.
Pink, they said. Pink. You got it wrong.
Yep. But fear not, the color change isn't a sign of the apocalypse.
It's not.
Could be.
Yeah.
1/3 of the water's turned to blood, right?
We don't know, yeah.
Isn't a sign of the apocalypse or an ecological disaster.
Yeah. Ecological disaster. You said ecological.
Cilia algae. I said every single one of those words except algae wrong. Are totally harmless and pinkened by the lake every year.
Oh, wow.
The lake water evaporates in the heat of the summer, killing plankton and that usually eat the algae. Stony Brook University, ecology research professor Christopher Goldberg explains to ABC News.
Yeah.
So now the algae is thriving and will probably be red until the lake fully evaporates.
Until the
probably
second coming.
Next month.
Next
During
month.
The peak of the summer heat, said he said, Goober.
That's his name?
All right. Go ahead. Have a drink. It's Goobler.
Goober!
Goobler.
From the Andy Griffith Show.
Wouldn't recommend drinking the water, but added that the organisms have antioxidant properties.
Yeah. Don't drink the water, Goober said not to.
Well, hi, hey!
Woo doggies! Woo doggies, Nathan!
Woo doggies!
Yeah, Goober.
There's also a rich in red beta carotene.
Oh.
Which gives flamingos their pink color.
Oh, man.
Tazgula is one of the largest salt lakes in the world, and it lies in a depression in the Turkey's dry central plateau. Hey, that was almost right.
No.
Most of the year, it covers 580 square miles and is just 3 to 6 feet deep. The lake recedes and recommend is you click that and I automatically just keep ringing the bell. I'll keep making mistakes.
Ring the bell.
The lake recedes and returns every summer, leaving behind cracked salt flats that supply half of Turkey's salt.
and attract snap happy tourists.
Snap happy tourists.
No,
you're referring to cameras.
Yeah. Drink up anyway, guys. Is that it for that story?
That is it. For, I was really hoping for an apocalypse story then.
Well, yeah, that was, well, yeah, it might have been. Black Swan lets vampire boyfriend suck her blood.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, anyway, thanks Dave Moy from Pop Culture Journal.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Some lovers give their hearts. Blut Catchin. That's right, gives her blood. Blood.
Blah.
Yeah. Catchin 28 is the self-proclaimed Black Swan. What's that, Nathan?
That would be somebody who allows a vampire to feed on them.
A person who willingly lets people who claim to be vampires suck her blood. I messed that up, so did Nathan. He got the definition wrong by one word.
Oh my gosh, one word, and I wasn't reading it.
We're strict on this show. In fact, her name is the German term of blood kittens.
Meow.
Kitty. Her current partner in plasma, is Michael Vouchamil. Drink anyway, guys. I don't know. 43 of Houston, based incense artist. Wow.
Incense artist.
That's what I said. Incense artist.
Yeah, but I could hear incest trying to come out of your language.
I was trying to. Drink twice, guys. I don't know. Anyway, he's a 43-year-old Houston-based incense artist whom she met 2 years ago, according to the Barcroft TV. The pair began their corpsicle. That's real. I got that. Connection 2 years ago at a vampire's ball in Houston. Hey, we know a little bit about vampire's ball.
Oh, yeah. I've attended vampire balls.
Well, I've never attended, but we were in the
place. Sean has handled vampire balls.
Yeah. Well, at least I didn't suck them. Anyway.
I wasn't going there.
Suck your blood.
But you did.
Vampire ball in Houston and have a few blood-sucking sessions a year. Catchin said, you have to have a very strong connection to the person who is feeding off you. She told Barcroft, Michael and I have a very intimate relationship, and I trust him completely.
Of course you do.
Still, the couple practices what might be called safe sucks. Anyway, I have specific tools that draw the blood, and Michael will drink it from my body. The cuts are about an inch long. It doesn't take a very deep cut, Nathan, to draw the blood.
Yeah, I can vouch to that.
That's what Catchin says. Catchin makes a cut with a razor blade.
See, cut heard around the world, Sean.
Cut heard around the world. Catchin makes a cut with a razor blade and then draws out. That's the special tool, a razor blade? Yeah.
Hey, remember, I brought special tools to draw my blood for Extreme Paranormal, and when they got stolen off the airplane, they handed me a razor blade.
Right. Yeah, you brought your heroin needle, but that...
Yeah, that was it.
Anyway.
Thanks, Sean. The comments of Sean Burris do not represent those of Ghost Man and Demon Hunter or their associates.
They do. Catchin makes a cut with a razor blade and then draws out from her shoulders or back with a set of suction cups. Catchin said she has been a black swan for nearly 13 years and has yet to contract an STD or other illness. Just keep shooting for the stars, honey.
Yeah.
What she does get is a feeling of satisfaction. It's a release like any other. That's what she says.
I could use a release.
Yeah. And she says, if you're getting something out of it, and the drinker is too, then I don't see a problem with it. Okay, well, there you go.
Good for you.
She sucks. Her partner sucks her blood. Anyway. That's it from that story.
Hey, Sean, do you want creepy clowns?
I do. I like creepy clowns.
Okay, then I'll leave the creepy clown story for you.
Oh, okay.
And I will take traces of cocaine and other illegal drugs. Illicit drugs. Have a drink, folks. Found in Ontario drinking water from the Huffington Post here, Sean.
And the McGill study, yeah.
From the Canadian Press.
Okay.
Montreal, a new study says that drinking water in parts of southern Ontario contain traces of several illegal drugs, including cocaine.
Wow!
Researchers at the McGill University found water discharged from the wastewater treatment plant in the Grand River's watershed. has a potential to contaminate sources of drinking water with drugs such as morphine, cocaine, and oxycodone.
Wow.
And that could be bad. Imagine if you're going for your drug test the next day, Sean.
The study published in the Journal of Environmental Toxicity and Chemistry says that the drugs are found only in the relatively limited quantities in the river water.
Okay.
However, hey Sean, maybe next time I fail a drug test, I could say I was in Canada.
I was drinking water.
Yeah. However, it is noted their concentrates did not decline with distance downstream from the wastewater treatment plant, and says many of the drugs were not removed completely during the drinking water treatment.
Okay.
Lead author professor, it says proof, not my fault. It does say proof. Prof. Okay. Lead author prof.
Prof.
I don't want to say it wrong.
Right.
And say professor. Vivian Yargu.
Just in case.
That's pretty close.
Yeah.
Of McGill's Department of Chemical Engineering says improving wastewater treatment processes can help clean up the drinking water.
Yeah.
Yargu says the results of the study, that's as close as I can get, demonstrate a link between wastewater plant discharges and the quality of drinking water sources. While previous studies have shown that there are trace elements of various chemicals in the remains of the drinking water, what is novel about this research is that we looked at the chemicals that were found in the water caused between the wastewater and the treatment plant and the drinking water treatment plant, Yargo said. The next stage in Yargo's research will be a 5-year project to look into how improvements of the wastewater treatment natural process along the river impact the process of contaminated drinking water. Well, it's not as fun as I thought, Sean, but I still think the next time I go in to take a drug test, I am going to say, I was in Canada last week, and I drank a lot of water.
So. Somewhere out there in Canada is a very unhappy drug dealer.
Yes.
Somebody, I lost my stash!
Punch you in the mouth!
Yeah.
Well, think about it. You know, every time, you know, somebody uses that stuff, how do they check for it? They check through your urine. So, I mean, if people are constantly flushing this stuff down, I mean, eventually, right? Eventually. That just makes me wonder if that's all runoff, how much cocaine and oxycodone and morphine is running around in southern Canada there?
I don't know. I've never took a drink of water and felt great, you know? Anyway, let's run through this. We're at 7:54, and we still got to do Legends. Creepy clown menaces Chicago cemetery. Got to bring this up.
It's everybody's favorite.
A clown lurking around a cemetery at night sounds like a disturbing scene from a Stephen King novel.
Nonsense. I see a clown in the cemeteries all the time when Sean and I go out on investigations. Yeah.
But it turned into a real-life scare when some costumed bozo was spotted in the Chicago graveyard. At the Rose Hill Cemetery, a bizarre figure dressed in a yellow clown suit and a rainbow wig was seen waving to passersby.
We all float down here. We all float down here.
You know, I was almost going to say, I wonder, because there is a remake of Stephen King's It coming out. I just wonder. Anyway, they see him waving in the cemeteries, guys. Julia Graham was driving by a historic cemetery with her husband when they saw the clown running toward the main gate around 10 p.m. on a recent night. When they got closer, we realized it was a clown, which is super weird, she says, you think? She told the station, I mean, this was somebody putting forth a lot of effort and being really weird. The clown eventually noticed the Graham's vehicle and turned toward it and slowly waved at the couple in an unsettling fashion.
Yeah, because every time a clown in a cemetery waves at me, it's settling.
You want a balloon? A balloon animal? The couple captured the spooky wave on cell phone before the clown ran off, according to the UPI.com. The real identity of the clown is unknown. Cemetery officials said there have been no reports of vandalism, according to the Chicagoist.com. Chicago police say there have been no other clown sightings in the recent weeks, but a small subset of humanity seems to get kicks by playing on the creepy clown trope. Anyway, you might remember October 2013, they had a lot of that in Europe, in the Magic Kingdom. in the United Kingdom. I guess it's magical. Who knows?
I guess where all those legends come from.
Yeah. Anyway, guys, that's this week's.
Speaking of legends, Sean.
Legend A. Oh, I'm sorry. That's this week's In the News. You're killing me. You're killing me. You're throwing my whole game off here. Anyway, guys, you know what time it is?
What time is it, Sean?
It's time for Legend X, guys. It's an original series by Nathan and myself where each week we comb the universe, or at least the United States, and try to bring you the greatest and latest in legends, from Bigfoot to the swamp creatures to the Frogman. Each week we have a brand new one. This week's Legend X is...
Lillian Gray.
Lillian
victim
Gray.
Victim of the Beast.
Oh... That's it.
Ooh.
Yeah, apparently.
Hey, Sean, I picked out a legend this week that isn't exactly a monster.
Yeah.
It's a mystery.
Okay.
And I thought it'd be a nice mystery for people to check out and see if they can find out the answer to and let us know.
I think it would be.
This legend all started thanks to a tombstone located in the middle of the county of Salt Lake City in Utah. Hey, Sean, we'll be there next April.
We will.
How about that? It belongs to a woman named Lillian E. Gray, who died in the 1950s at the age of 77. At first glance, it doesn't look any different from any other gravestone surrounding it.
Okay.
Nothing changes the, nothing catches the eye until you see the inscription written underneath. Victim of the Beast, 666.
Uh-oh.
Now, that is a bit unusual.
It is.
This, of course, coming to us, Sean, from liveverse.com.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
What could this this statement mean? Is it some kind of accusation?
I don't know.
Made by a believer of one of the most religious cities in the nation?
It might be.
Could she have been... sacrificed in some kind of satanic cult?
I don't know.
Was she a devil worshiper herself?
I don't know. I'm interested, though.
An innocent woman punished by in a Salem-style witch hunt.
Wow. Yeah, maybe.
No possible idea to know, Sean. There's only some rumors that indicate that the citizens have come up with to explain it.
Ah.
Of course, there are always those who come along to ruin the fun. It looks like the inscription was comprised by a woman's anti-government group that her husband belonged to, who blamed the police for her death. It is heard to say whenever that someone makes the whole thing less creepy. I lost my train of thought. The whole thing seems less creepy when you find out that her husband had it imprinted on there as an anti-government statement. However, the rumor has led to huge followings of this gravestone in Salt Lake City, Stone. And if we get the chance while we're down there, we should check it out.
Absolutely.
I lost my entire thing there, Sean. Can we edit that out in the mix?
Yeah, we can.
It goes out to the networks. It's
all our live listeners, Shadow Nation, pay no attention to this.
Pay no attention to what you just heard. The man behind the microphone is just there to distract you.
Not well versed in the English language. Anyway, guys, Demon Hunter, tonight's guest, since the young age of 7, he was entranced by fantasy movies. He says he used to watch them just so he could replicate some of the stuff from them. Ninth grade, he went to Tom Savini's special makeup effects, never looked back. At age 26, he received the phone call that would change it all for sci-fi channel's smash hit, Face Off. Tonight's guest, Tyler Green.
Tyler Green.
Yes. I like to call him fantasy-driven artist. He's going to stop by studio tonight and tell us all about it, guys. Behind the scenes of Face Off, the pressures of a young artist. Did you like that?
Ooh, I like that.
That could be his autobiography. Anyway, guys, each week we play a new band, an independent band. We're here for the little guy. We back him. We know we love him. This week's band, Kulla. We played him before. This is a new song, though, guys. The name of the song, The Follow Fellow. Shadow Nation, Demon Hunter.
Ghost Band.
We'll be right back. Thank you. Shadow Nation to the one, the only, Mystifying Oracle Radio. your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show. Tonight's guest, since the young age of 7, he was entranced by fantasy movies. He says he would watch a movie just so he could try and replicate something from it. In the 9th grade, he attended Tom Savini's special makeup effects program. There, he would learn the tricks of the trade, baby. At age 26, he received a phone call that would change it all. Sci-Fi Channel smash hit Face Off asked him to come on and compete. Please help us welcome tonight's guest to studio, the fantasy-driven artist, Tyler Green. Tyler, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Outstanding. It's such a huge honor to have you on. Big fan of Face Off. Big fan of your work.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. Now,
we were discussing earlier, Tyler, Sean and I were talking, and I was like, you know, there's a lot of dispute out there. A lot of people think Tyler should have won Face Off.
Yeah, controversy.
Hey, you know what? You know what? I made it to the end. I feel like a winner. You know what I mean? Just because someone else got the title doesn't make me feel like a winner, you know? My goal was to make it to the end, and I did, you know? So I feel like a winner right, you know, right in my own heart. So no matter what.
Absolutely. And, of course, the press you get and the everything else from Face Off, I'm sure the phone started ringing, baby, as soon as it was
on. My goodness. It's what's really strange, this year has been even bigger for me as far as opportunities. And, you know, I never say no to an opportunity. You know, I don't care if it's not paid. It's just something that will just it excites me. I love doing new and interesting things, because I figure, hey, one door, you know, opens and much more will happen, you know? So I've kind of had that mentality moving forward, so.
Yeah. Well, you do amazing things. We were talking. Well, I guess we should get into some of your past. Like I was saying in your intro.
Sure.
Since the young age of 7, what were some of the movies
that
you used to be entranced with?
Oh, Jim Henson. Anything Jim Henson for me. The Dark Crystal of the Labyrinth. I mean, as a young kid, I was in the belief that those things were real, you know?
And oh, yeah.
I was just so involved in his type of style. I mean, Jim Henson was the master of creatures back then. And it's kind of started a whole new age of everything. And I was so inspired by the way he brought characters to life, and I just think that he was a great inspiration for me. And then, of course, Rick Baker and Dick Smith, and yeah, you know, it's kind of spiraled from there, you know. So,
and yeah, how do you feel about Rick Baker's current announcement that he is leaving the film industry?
Well, I mean, it's unfortunate, but you know what? For him, I understand. You know, I think that, you know, I got to say, you know, going with the new age, I mean, digital technology is kind of taking over. But at the same time, how I look at it as a tool, you know, a tool that can be used. But you know what I've noticed is it's kind of being overused.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing I can say there.
That physical presence is always so incredible. I mean, if you watch the original Jurassic Park to any of the ones that came after it, when you know those puppets were involved during the original, you see the puppet. You react with the actor when they're reacting to seeing the puppet, and you don't get that with the CGI.
I know. It's just something that it's like it's not there. Your eyes look at it, but it's just something's off. And I think it's that part that's missing. You know what I mean? So I don't know what's going on, but I just really wish that more practical effects would just come to play, because it's that, again, that interaction with the actors and the audience that see a physical thing, it's there, it's real, holy cow, you know? So we need to start bringing this back, because it's just going to become video game style cinema, which unfortunately, I hope it doesn't turn into that, but you know what? It looks like it might be going towards that, unfortunately, but nothing against CG. I think it's an amazing technology. It's just, if you want to do a creature movie, come on, you got to make it look real, you know?
No, I think CG's killing the monster movies and stuff. I mean, I heard it was a lower cost to make movies like that. That's why a lot of the B films are adding that. But how many remakes, man, have they killed with CGI?
You know, oh my goodness.
What was it, just Poltergeist? Yeah. Yeah, but we had Boba Fett on, actor Jeremy Bullock, a couple months ago.
Oh, my goodness.
And he agreed with you, and he agreed with us about, like, I asked him, what about the new Star Wars? And he basically went into, well, you know, there are different types or whatever. But now, J.J. Abrams coming out with the, everybody's waiting this December for the new Star Wars Force Awakens. And he said in one of his interviews, I am bringing back the real monsters. And that's why people are so excited, man. Because when I first seen, I mean, how did you react when you seen Jabba the Hutt laying there? You know, I was nuts. I loved it.
Same here. I'm like, oh my gosh. I wonder what he feels like. That's kind of what I want to touch that guy. You know.
See, the rest of us were scared of him. You were going, I wonder if that's latex.
Oh, that's how I think. I'm like, okay, if that's moving like that, I kind of want to. What does that feel like? What does that thing? You know, what does its skin feel like? You know. So these are the things I was. Young kid going through, you know, and speaking of me being a younger kid, going around the house, I would find things to replicate the things that I saw. And I guess the number one thing that my parents that I used was scotch tape and tinfoil. That was like my go-to materials. I didn't know silicones or latex at that age, you know, and they told me, you know, I have the pieces still. It's disturbing looking at it now, you know, because it was just so bizarre, something I would create, but I made these characters, small figures and a head of scotch tape, and it had a lot of transparency to it. So I must have had that concept back then, like people have, you know, a little bit of transparency. They're not opaque. I don't know why I was thinking at a young age, but that's how I thought.
You know, it's funny, when Face Off first came out, I kept thinking I was going to see this friend of mine from high school. I went to a theater school, and one of my friends was a makeup artist there, and she, you know, wonderfully talented girl. Her name was Misty. And I kept thinking, I'm going to see Misty on this show. And then about 2 years ago, I went back to a high school reunion, and there she was. And I asked her, you know, oh, what are you doing? And she now is a dentist. It's like,
wow.
What? That's so awful.
Well, good for her. I was in the dentistry business myself, so I can relate to that a little bit, but even before I went on the show. But I know sometimes people's, you know, things change or whatnot, you know, sometimes it's, all right, got to get into the real world here, but you know what, why can't you have it all, you know? You can still do makeup on the side and do other things as well, so who knows?
That's why Sean and I keep day jobs, so that we can keep doing this. So
you got to, right? You got to.
Yeah,
you got to.
Now, why, you know, most high school kids, you can't even get them to work a part-time job. You know, or pay their own car payments or whatever. But you, while you were in high school, attended Tom Savini's special effects makeup program. How was that, man? Was it intimidating for a young kid to go in there? I mean, you were only in ninth grade.
Well, I actually, to clear that up, I was in ninth grade when I went to look at the school, and I geared my whole high school curriculum going to that school as soon as I graduated.
Oh, okay.
So when I turned 18, I moved right out to the Pittsburgh area where they were, and I just started, you know, and I was 18, becoming 19. I had never really been, you know, kicked out of the nest, let's just say, to do that. And here's my parents going to this, you know, visiting this school when I was in ninth grade. What is going on? I mean, there's people dressed up in drag and, you know, clown makeup, and I'm loving it. You know, I'm loving it. And here they're going, what is this place? But now they completely understand the world that it is. You know what I mean? And it's just hilarious. Right. You know, and now I look back on it now, and it's just, holy cow.
Right, absolutely. So you're 26 years old. You're sitting on the, I don't know what you were doing. I guess I'm going to ask you. The phone rings. How did that work out when Sci-Fi Channel gave the call?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, the casting process alone was just intense. I mean, I've auditioned since season 3. So I kind of had an idea, okay, they're going to save me for a season. So I was, believe it or not, I was actually supposed to be on season 5. And they did a swap out the last second because they casted season 5 and 6 back to back. So I flew out to LA twice doing the makeup application on myself, a little behind the scenes here to let you guys know.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I presented the makeup in front of the producers and we talked about myself. And, you know, it's kind of like, all right, you know, this was what, February of 2000 and, you know, I would say 13 when this happened. Okay. And around July, I got the phone call. You were going to be on season 6. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. Oh my God. You know, and I'm just like, oh my gosh. And it just kind of blew up from there, you know. And, you know, not to get a little, you know, personal, but I'll let you know, one of my life goals when I was a little kid, I wanted to make monsters. I wanted to go to Hollywood, and I wanted to be on TV because I kind of wanted the people to see what I did because no one believed me.
Right.
You know, and it was very emotional for me to land in, you know, LAX, go on, take the shuttle, the bus that they had, going past the Hollywood sign.
Yeah.
Going on set to make monsters to be on TV. It's a very emotional day for me that day when I went. So it was like, oh my gosh, like this is my childhood dream come into life in one day.
Yeah.
To me, you know? So I had to think of something else. What's my next goal? You know, is it gonna, oh my gosh, I gotta make it to the end. And that's how I drive myself. I set goals, complete them, and then start greater ones. That's kind of how I live, you know? Because it challenges myself, it challenges me.
Now, you had a full-time job, I assume, when you got this. How did you get the time off work and stuff like that? I know when we had the TV show, it was hard. Had to take vacation and get people to work for us.
Yeah, like I was working at a dental lab, the local dental lab. I was responsible for creating the gum tissue for the dental appliances. And I basically said, you know what, I need to do this thing. You know, I, at the time, I kind of had a setup afterwards. Even if I didn't win, I knew I wanted to go off on my own. I now own a product development company, Creative Genius LLC, and I come up with my own products and bring them to market. And I'm actually working very hard on that at the moment, and as well as my makeup. You know, I teach classes, I do all these things. So I kind of left the corporate world knowing that I'm going to go on the show, and after that, it's all working for me and nobody else.
Right.
So and I've stuck with it ever since the show aired, and things have been coming out of the woodwork like crazy, and I'm just really thankful.
Now you say you teach classes, and you live in Connecticut, and I live in Connecticut.
I do. I live in the Litchfield area, yeah, in the woods.
Do any of these classes start off at, say, a beginner level that someone like myself can walk in and...
Correct, and that's kind of where I started. And that's the Warner Theater Center for Creative Arts Education over here at the Warner Theater. They have an entire separate division for education. And when I approached them, they were just so excited. You know, here's a very, very old-fashioned theater, and they have this wonderful, beautiful new facility where they teach. And, you know, there's all types of things, drama, there's music lessons, but not what I wanted to offer, and that's kind of why they loved it. So I started off doing sculpting classes and then special makeup effects classes, where Krylon actually sponsored that for me, and Krylon is still the current sponsor of Face Off. So it was just great, you know, bringing anybody who could, and it was just beginner's level. You know, I wanted to start people off with, okay, let's start off with this. These are the products. We're going to do cuts, bruises, and wounds, and move all the way up to actual prosthetic application using a pre-made prosthetic and blending the edges great. And it was a 10-week program, and it was such a hit that the waiting list is unbelievable, and they start up again this fall. So if the volume continues, I might have to, oh my gosh, do, you know, get my own place and do something greater, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
Start
oh my
your
goodness.
Own school
so,
of makeup
yeah.
art. It's
I would love that. I would love that. You know, the Tyler Green Academy. I don't know.
Yeah.
The Tyler Green Effects or something. I don't know. I mean, there's so many wonderful opportunities that I have right now, and I'm kind of letting them all roll. You know, if I get overwhelmed, oh, well, I'm young, you know. Let it happen.
Little side note for you here, Sean. The Warner Theater, known to be haunted. So,
yes, I've heard that. The paranormal investigators did an investigation there, and their claims to be a young girl in the theater.
That legend goes back years. Because,
Oh, yeah. I've heard the stories.
My whole household is theater people, not just, you know, paranormal people. So we've been dug in deep to that theater for many, many years. So.
Oh my goodness! I was just there last night, seeing their their version of The Addams Family, which is fantastic.
Oh,
it was a really great performance.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I think tonight's the last performance, unfortunately. But I know, I think, I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. But it was amazing. It was hilarious, funny, and it was packed too. It was a full house, so
I
it was a great show.
There. I think the last thing I saw there was their version of Arsenic and Old Lace this year.
So, wow.
Hey, Tyler, if you would take us backstage at Sci-Fi Channel's face-off. Take us backstage. Everybody wants to know the pressure. How's the setup? How do you guys do it? Do you work on camera, off camera? Let us know.
Yeah, so that's a crazy question that everybody asked me. And the one thing I can say, it's almost like if you have not been on reality TV, it's going to be very hard for you to kind of emotionally connect with it. But I know you guys have.
Yeah.
But what's crazy is, you know, it's kind of, it's not scripted or anything. It's just they kind of have to have a guideline where the most awkward thing for me is doing those interviews. You know, they would shoot you know, each episode, which was broken in between 3 days, you know, we have 3 days to make these things, but when you add it up, it's 17 to 19 hours worth of work. You know, the first day it really is 4, the next is 9, and then the 4, and then the 1 hour at last look. So the time crunch is unbelievable. It's all real. You know, the clock goes. And if you want to break for lunch, it's on your time. The clock is still going. It's like there in your face. And it's scary, but you know what? At the end, I actually made a game,
right.
And I want to beat the clock. I'm not going to let that thing mess me up. I would try to beat the clock. And I think that's why I was known to be one of the fastest contestants I ever had, because I get a tremendous amount of time management skills from both my parents. So I think that's helped me in my makeup career on the show as well. But going backstage, it's really intense. I mean, what you guys don't see is there's like 300 people behind us that you don't see, you know? And as a young kid, I was terrified of public speaking and being in front of people. And here I go being pushed, you know, 10 cameras in my face, teleprompters. And, you know, I'm talking to not only the three judges, but the other 300 people plus the contestants in the production. So I got over my fears really quick. But I think what also helped and what made it great was, you know, I'm talking about my own work, and that's really, I have a lot of passion for the work that I do. So there's so many other crazy things, which, you know, I could say a couple things, you know,
yeah.
But, Just going backstage, I mean, it's like, you know, the sets are pretty interesting. You know, the Sci-Fi stage is beautiful. There's all these really cool panels and everything. But when we go off stage, there's like a waiting room, and that's where we just like sit, and they just kind of film us sitting, you know. And the time too, you guys don't really know the time frame either. It's like last looks, let's say, it really is 1 hour, you know. But once last looks are done, it's like we have 4 hours until we actually go on stage, and then another 2 hours between them deciding who's the winner or who's going home. So it's crazy. You know, sometimes the days are up to 14 hours. The finale was near 20 hour. It was a 20 hour day. So the time and the footage that they use is crazy. And what they cut it down to, you know, it's like, wow, that really went really quick, you know?
Yeah, people don't get the, we found that out working in reality TV too. People seem to think when you watch us for an hour that we did all that in an hour.
No.
And
no. You know,
I try to explain to people, you have to pretty much figure that a minute that you watch on television equals an hour of filming.
Yeah.
Correct. Correct.
And that's
correct.
Basically what it comes down to. And plus, you had all the layover time in between of waiting. So that's insane. I mean, I wouldn't have thought that long. And I figured that the judges didn't turn around and have their votes ready in 5 minutes during the commercial. But 2 hours of waiting to find out what happened. And, you know, going to your record while you were on Face Off, your first night you come out, you were on the bottom end.
Yeah, I was.
And
funny,
you,
because so many people were like, oh, that was such a cool design. I mean, and you never know. Still to this day, I never know, you know, what I thought was a top look end up going home. And that, I'm like, oh my gosh, like it really is up to the judges, their preference, whatever. But it's like, you never really know, you know what I mean? Unless you really don't follow the challenge, you know, then you'll really know. Or if someone has a mishap or something, then they're kind of lenient with it. But then again, it's like so sometimes it seems subjective, I guess, but it is what it is, you know, and it's kind of like out of your hands as soon as you're the last minute's up, you know?
And then you go the entire season staying like in the middle or on the top end, winning, like I think four. You won four of them during your...
I won four challenges, yeah. I'll tell you right now, I was never a fan of the foundation challenges. I never liked them. It wasn't the pressure. It was, I had a very difficult time force-fitting appliances that I feel are alienated to me. I'd rather be the one... Yeah, I don't know. I don't know
designing
if it's like a control. I don't know if it's like a control thing or something. But I kind of found it for me. I was never like picked or anything. I always did the worst. To me, I always thought I did the worst on foundation challenges. I don't know. I just think it's one of those things where it's like if I designed it myself instead of just randomly picking, you know, pre-made appliances and costume, you know, within seconds, you know what I mean? I was just never a fan of the foundation challenges for me.
Well, then you went through almost the entire season staying high or above, and then like just before the finale, two shows before the finale, one more drop and you're up there on the block.
Yeah.
How did you feel standing up there knowing there's only one challenge left before the finale?
I really thought I was going home. I was, and it's funny because they came back during the next episode for the werewolf challenge, and I was just so like, I don't know, oh boy, you know? And I just went into this really depressing state, and I've never really felt depressed before, but I think the pressure was really getting to me right after they said they hated it, you know? And it carried through until the next episode where Mackenzie and her father had to come back. And from what I heard, that was Mackenzie just felt for me, and she goes, we have to do this. And that came out of nowhere, and I was just in this rut, you know. I was just like, I don't know. You hit a spot, and I hit the spot, you know what I mean? I was just like, oh boy, here we go.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just like, it was all these thoughts going through my head, missing home, all these things. And then after they came back, it was like, all right, you know what? You can do this, you know? And it was just like a boom, you know, like a fire got started, and I just pulled, you know, full 180 and just went for it. And it was a top, that werewolf was the top look, you know, next to George. And then that got me a second position in the finale. So it was just like, looking back on it, it's really amazing. You are in control of your own destiny.
Yeah.
You are in control. It's just, you have to believe it. And that's something that a lot of young kids come up to me and they tell me, how do you pull through? How do you do this? You know, and this is why I could be such a great motivational speaker someday. I don't know, but I always tell the younger kids, I've been asked to go to a lot of schools and lecture as well. And I always say, you know, criticism is one thing, you know, but take that criticism and just think of it as something you didn't see, you know? Right. And the next time you do something, learn from that criticism. And that's how I took all the criticism on the show. Everything they told me, they hated it, they did this. I'm like, okay. Instead of taking it in a negative way, you know, in a dark place, I looked at it as, huh, that's something I didn't see. I didn't catch that. Oh, okay, thank you. And I would use that to my advantage the next time. So that's kind of just how I move forward with things like that.
Now, Tyler, I got to ask you, a lot of people want to know the chemistry between the contestants, because you come in and you get grouped with these people. And I know from being on, you know, film that when you work with even people you think are your pals and stuff like that, and you know,
Sean and I almost killed each other on set.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're hot, it's stressful, the lights are on you, you're making mistakes, the producers are telling you do this over and do this over. How's the chemistry with people you don't even know? How's that work out?
You know what? It's all casting. I mean, there is a super science to this stuff. And believe it or not, I can say every single one of my, you know, contestant, you know, friends are my friends. Every single one of them. It's just, I don't know what it is. Our season had no animosity that I thought. I had no grudge against anybody. I literally loved everyone. Rashad is still my buddy from the show. We talk. I just talked to him last week. We are all such a very close group, and it's just weird. I just think it's like, wow, here's more people like me, and that's how it was on the show. Yeah. But I think when you're in a room with other creative people, it makes you more creative and it challenges you. Yeah. You know? So, I mean, there were things, you know, where Rashad would be like, oh, what are you making over there? I'm going to make this. I'm like, all right, I'm going to make this even bigger. Yeah. So it was just, we had a lot of fun, you know? And our season really didn't have any, you know, drama, really. It was more of what we did was the drama, maybe, but we didn't, I mean, this isn't the Jersey Shore here. You know, this is like real, this is like art, you know, and, you know, you're seeing what we really are making, you know, and I don't know that it was just, other seasons do, they have that, and it's just like, really, come on.
Well, TV loves that, man. The TV loves that. That's what they said. I snapped at Nathan. I think it only happened once, Nathan, but it was, we were at this old prison, and there was bird poop everywhere, you're right? We're probably going to die from some rare bird disease from breathing in the bird poop, but, you know, it was, we were walking around 4 o'clock in the morning. I think we've been filming 20 hours, and, you know, sweating to death, 120 degrees in this old prison, and what'd you say, Nathan? I think he told him, he was giving him ideas, and I was like, Nathan, just let him direct, and let's get the hell out of here, you know, and but afterwards, the producer came up to me and goes, you know, my only regret on you guys snapping was I didn't have the camera going. So they loved that.
Oh, see,
stuff.
They could have used that. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, they loved it, man. They loved it. But, you know, you don't have any ill will towards the people. It's you get out there and they demand these things out of you and you just get frustrated, you know?
Oh, of course. Of course.
Like you said, I know you're depressed feeling by being on film because, Nathan, you remember when it was my turn to drive, they had this big fancy SUV. And you know how they, well, in the TV, and I'm sure just like in Face Off, they put so many lights on, you can't even see what you're doing there for a while. Well, it's pitch black night on these roads I don't know, and we pull into a golf course to turn around, and they have that big light on the visor shining in my face for they can videotape me. Well, I go right over this huge boulder. So this SUV stuck on a boulder. Oh, man, I want to crawl in a Coke can and die.
It was great, Tyler. Literally, the boulder is underneath the car, keeping all four wheels off the ground, so we couldn't drive off of it. And we're sitting there, and these guys who were golfing all that day and had stopped and were just drinking for the night come walking over in their plaid golf pants and are just like, ah, looks like you got some problems going on there, huh? The only thing I could think of was I looked to the director right after the argument Sean and I had, and they said, I looked over and said, did you get that on film?
Yeah. Yeah. No, and they cut it. Yeah, they cut it out. But yeah. No, anyway,
I've had my slip up moments too. I always drop stuff by accident, and I remember dropping a gallon of Telesis, which is one of the highest medical grade glues in the industry, very expensive stuff, and that gallon was around maybe a little over $1,000.
Yeah.
So totally dropped that.
Oh no.
Hey, I've got to ask this, and you know we've talked about it, but I haven't gotten to tell my wife about it yet because I wanted her to listen to the show. like, if you want the answers, you got to listen to the show. A lot of people wonder, you know, you do all this wonderful makeup, And then the next thing we see is you're running in the back and coming running out holding costumes. Is there just a giant room full of costumes in the back, or?
No, no. And I could say this too, because it's kind of been out there, but we don't have time to make the costumes, but what happens, I'll give you an example. As soon as we are given the challenge and we go in and we are starting the first day sculpting, let's say getting our designs ready, basically before Mr. Westmore and Mackenzie come out, there's a couple departments that come by you. There's, you know, backgrounds, there's contacts, and then there's the costume designers. They come out and they ask for a sketch. So on top of everything we're doing, they prefer to have a sketch. I always had a sketch of what I wanted. Now, what you guys don't know as well, whatever model that we pull off of the shelf, their face, there is a booklet of them that you guys don't see. It's all their measurements, so we know what their facial structure looks like, their measurements, and the costume department asks us what we are looking for, and we tell them very specific things. I always did. They always spent the longest time with me. But that's what they're looking for, and then they would go make it. And then on the day of the application, they would be there for you, and you could alter them and change them unless it was a rental or if they made it in house. So I always enhanced that even further, you know. So our costumes were not made, but I always altered mine to make them work for whatever I wanted.
Right. Hey, Tyler, I know we're running out of time, so I just wanted to ask people, or ask you, what is next for Mr. Tyler Green?
Oh my goodness, there is a ton of things. Like I said, I am teaching. I'm kind of doing the whole the trade show circuit right now, going to a few Comic-Cons. I have two films coming up in the fall, and I'm also in the process of working on two of my products that I have a patent pending for that are going in front of some pretty large retailers, and maybe you'll be able to see those products next year. So it's pretty exciting.
I got to see one of the products at the...
You did. The Wonder Van is known. I know everyone's kind of like, when is that coming out? But I have to say, another opportunity has arisen where that could be a very big deal for me to be in some very large makeup retailer worldwide. So that's what I'm praying and hoping for, you know, and if... Now, it's going to be out.
the Wonder Band makes me think back to the episode. Did you have something similar to the Wonder Band on the...
That was my prototype. Yep. I had the prototype on the show, and I will tell you, that thing saved my butt so many times.
For those of you who don't know, the Wonder Band is a wrist-worn band that allows you to get to all of your makeup brushes without having to go looking for them on the tabletops or in a box or in anything like that. So... Very nice product there.
Thank you.
Well, I got to tell you, Tyler, I know we're running out of time, man. You're amazing at what you do, and you're an amazing guy. And where can people get a hold of you or check you out, man?
Yeah, absolutely. You can definitely check me out at Tyler Green on my Facebook page or on Twitter at WonderBandMan. So check
awesome.
It out.
Awesome, brother. Well, I tell you what, Nathan, do you want to close out the show?
I would love to. I would just like to say this one last question to Tyler. Looking back on your face-off experience, what was your favorite makeup while you were there?
The favorite makeup for me was the Wang Doodle. The being able to do a challenge where I was so in love with the books that Roald Dahl made. It was the most rewarding challenge for me because it was like I was making something that I grew up so much creativity came from reading Roald Dahl's books for me as a kid, and that's just it was just my inspiration for that challenge. So that had a very personal touch to my heart, that episode, so which I think carries through for me for the win because I had so much passion for it.
Well, I have to say I loved pretty much all of your...
Well, thank you. I hated my anime. I didn't like that at all. But well, everything else I kind of liked.
That's fair. I mean, anime, you know, anime is an unfair challenge. I have to agree with Peter Griffin when it comes to anime. For some reason, everyone in Japan is either a teenage girl or a monster. So I...
with plaid skirts, yeah.
Yeah. So, Sean... if you want to, I would like to thank Tyler for coming on this evening. Ladies and gentlemen, Tyler Green, artist, inventor, and future speaker to the masses of youth who need encouragement.
Thank you. I love that title.
it has been an incredible honor to have you on this evening. And Sean, I don't have the list of all the people who take this show that you and I do and put it out there. So would you thank everybody for us this evening and pay the bills?
I can do that. Tyler, can you stay on the line 1 second, bud?
Sure.
Tyler Green from the Smash It Face Off. Okay, guys, special thanks to all our homes, all our sponsors, Stitcher Smart Radio, Planet Paranormal, Action Audio Apps. Hey, are you guys listening? Because they want to know, so check them out at actionaudioapps.com. Midnight Syndicate, Creative Commons, and Free Music Archives. Thanks for the tunes from the haunted backroads of America. This has been another exclusive G&D show interview. Don't go changing America. You know we love you, Demon Hunter.
Because we love you.
Night, guys.